This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton, and thank you for joining us today for our Radio Main Street across North Dakota. Today, we're going to start our show talking with Eric Osberg. He is the Rural Rebound Initiative Coordinator for Otter Tail County. And Eric, where are you as we speak?
Right now, I am working from home.
Okay, and that's in Wadena, Minnesota?
That is in Wadena, Minnesota, yes, sir.
What brought you to Otter Tail County?
As a life choice or as a career?
Well, both.
Well, I'll give you the shortened long version. I was a financial advisor for Edward Jones Investments, and I was working in Duluth, Minnesota. And they said, hey, would you mind moving to Wadena, Minnesota? And I didn't know where Wadena, Minnesota was. Highway 10, right? And this was like 15 years ago. So it wasn't like you just pulled out your phone and Googled it, right? Like I pulled out a map and I distinctly remember finding Wadena. And then I remember seeing all of the lakes to the west of Wadena. And I had fallen in love with Lake Superior and I wasn't sure I could leave it. But then when I saw all those lakes, I thought, well, if I'm going to leave one big lake, I'll trade it for 1,000 others. So that was 2005. We moved to Wadena, and then I worked in the financial services industry for a while, tried my own business, and then I ended up with working for Otter Tail County in 2017.
And you have actually been a TV sports guy too, right?
I have been a TV sports guy. Yeah. I started at KNBN in Rapid City, South Dakota. And then I worked at a startup station in St. Cloud that never really got going. And that's how I ended up in Duluth. And then I ended up at WDIO in Duluth. And then I left TV and went into financial advising. So,
well, let's get to this Rural Rebound Initiative Coordinator. What is this job?
That's usually the first question and the biggest question. Basically, it's my job to write our own narrative, write the rural narrative, much like you do, right? And it's based off of, there's a researcher by the name of Ben Winchester. And Ben Winchester works for the University of Minnesota Extension. He collected data that suggests that for decades, organically, when you looked at the population of rural places, there was a net gain of 30 to 49-year-olds. Now, if you look at total population numbers, there may be a decline. But when you look at, you know, that age cohort, 30 to 49-year-olds, there's a net gain. Ben is a super smart guy and very compelling when he tells his story. But, you know, he talks a lot about the total population infatuation, right? Like who's got more people, rural or urban, and where do people live? And, you know, one of the things he points out is, you know, if you look at the Minneapolis, St. Paul metropolitan area, you know, places that used to be rural are now urban.
Yeah.
Right. So when you start looking, you know, so if you can remove yourself from the situation and look at specific parts of the data, there was a trend that said that some people, not all people, but some people, when they reach their 30s, they've got 1.2 kids, they just decide, you know what, this isn't the life I want. And so my boss was exposed to Ben's research, felt like Otter Tail County wasn't taking advantage of this natural phenomenon, so He created a pool of money to hire somebody to try to take advantage of what Ben Winchester calls the brain gain. So I started in 2017. And so again, my job is to highlight all of the positive things about rural life.
Well, that cohort you mentioned, 30 to 49, is quite valuable because, as you suggested, they have kids, they have families, yeah, they need schools, they pay taxes, they have jobs.
Yeah.
So how has the pandemic played a role, do you think? Has it yet? Are people becoming aware of this opportunity or the possibility of moving into a rural area? Like you mentioned, I remember when the Twin Cities were Ramsey and Hennepin County.
Right.
Then it became the 7-county metro area. Now it's the 11-county metro area. So what's the selling point for somebody to move and work in Otter Tail County?
Well, and I think right now we're still in, I guess I would say we're still in pandemic mode, right? Like as far as our messaging goes, if organically, again, I hate to keep using that word, but if organically somebody says, I want a little bit more space where I live, I want a little bit more wide open where I live. I don't want to necessarily be where I am right now, because of COVID-19, you know, that's a natural byproduct of it. We don't have a strategy right now to take advantage of that, for lack of a better word, just because we don't know how this is all going to play out, right? It is happening that people, there is a renewed interest in rural life. If you were quarantined somewhere, or you know, when the stay at home orders came out, you know, if you didn't like where you had to stay at home, you know, it became pretty obvious pretty fast, right? And so I believe long term there will be some opportunities to leverage that, if you will. But interestingly, you know, so we use tourism as an introduction to rural life. And so what we've done in our philosophy, you know, in the olden days, you had tourism over here on the left, and then you had economic development over there on the right, right? And what we said is no, that they're one and the same.
Yes.
If somebody's going to move somewhere, they got to know where it is, number one. Number two, if they've visited there as a tourist and had a positive experience, it'll be a heck of a lot easier to sell them on living there, right? So the reason I bring it up is when, you know, in March, we, you know, after years and years of come here, visit here, we had to say, no, we want you to come here, but not right now, right? Everybody hang tight and stay where you're at. So our messaging has pivoted a number of times over the past, however long ago March was, over the past few months, our messaging has pivoted from come here, visit here, live here to don't come here and visit here right now. And now we're getting back into the, okay, come here and visit here, but let's take a safety first approach to it.
Okay, so imagine you could live here, or imagine you could vacation here.
Right,
visualize that, and that's something that you do. You've had a video production company. You've got that background in TV,
yep,
sports and that kind of thing. So what kind of marketing campaign, if the pandemic went away, and we all hope it does soon, but of course we're still in the midst of it. If it went away, how would you be marketing Otter Tail County as a place to live? You know, and visit, obviously, but live. That seems to be the rebound initiative piece here.
The terminology I use all the time is document rather than produce. And it kind of goes back to the newsroom roots, right? Like if you're in a newsroom and you're going out to do a story, you just go and see what happens, and then you come back and you write the story based on the, you know, information that you found, right?
Yes.
Same philosophy applies. If it's a Sunday evening and I'm out on a boat, there's a certain group of people who are packing their cars, packing their vans, packing their trucks, and they're leaving, and they're going back to their metropolitan life, whether that be Fargo-Moorhead or Minneapolis-St. Paul or elsewhere, right? That Sunday evening blues, when you pack up because you know your weekend is over and now you've got to go back to whatever it is that your, you know, Monday through Friday life is. So the way, if it was over right now, if the pandemic was over right now, I don't think it would change all that much. It would just be a different tone, if you will. But it really is all about just documenting the real life reasons why why living in a rural place, whether it's Otter Tail County or elsewhere, can make a lot of sense for a lot of folks. And it is, number one, it's a pace of life. I lived in the metropolitan area for a long time. I was a courier through college. I was a courier, right? So I was in traffic 12 hours a day.
You're a Hamline University grad.
I'm a Hamline University grad, and to try to pay for that, I was a courier, and from 6 a.m. till sometimes, you know, late into the evening, I was in traffic. I think I've used up all of my traffic patience during that time. Like, I have zero tolerance for traffic jams anymore. I can't even, I start to stutter and stammer when I think about it, right? Like, so again, back to what would I be doing? It's, again, it's just you know, if your commute where you live right now is a half an hour or an hour, or dare I say longer than that, and it's stop and go and it's traffic and it's construction, it doesn't have to be that way. There are plenty of job opportunities, maybe not in the field you're in now, but there are plenty of jobs out there for those that want them, and in certain areas, and you can have a simpler pace of life and have a rewarding career as well. I'd prefer people do it in Otter Tail County, but any rural area, there are those opportunities that exist.
Well, you mentioned those opportunities, and part of it has to do with this technology we all enjoy these days. Broadband internet, for example, probably makes your job a little bit easier, because 15, 20 years ago, it would have been TV and radio broadcast, and you'd have a target audience that you'd have to reach for many thousands of dollars. I assume that eventually, you know, when you're fully marketing this, when the pandemic is past and you want people to be tourists in Otter Tail County or to consider living there, you will have a number of ways to appeal to them. So how would you describe your target market beyond 30 to 49?
Well, it'd be great if they have rural roots, if they grew up in a rural place, or spent time in a rural place, because, you know, the story is many times similar. You know, you grow up in a small town, you grow up, you know, you can't wait to leave that small town. Right. You can't wait to get. And that's OK. Right. You graduate from high school, you go to college, and you're going to go do whatever it is you're going to do. You're going to chase that dream. So rural roots is a demographic that, if at all identifiable, this lifestyle is appealing to folks who remember it in their youth. Right. And a lot of times maybe they have family or relatives that still live in the area, and that can be, you know, a support system, especially if they have young kids and they're looking for childcare assistance and things of that nature. You know, so the other demographics, married, kids, a lot of them are college educated, and they have careers. And so, like you said, that's a very sought after demographic. 30 to 49 year olds with, you know, married with children, college educated, in some type of professional career, that's the type of people that we're trying to reach. And if they have rural roots, then it makes it even better.
Eric Osberg is the Rural Rebound Initiative Coordinator for Otter Tail County, Minnesota. He lives in Wadena, and he's an avid outdoorsman, and he likes sports and all that kind of stuff. Let's get into the current effect of the pandemic on the hospitality industry, particularly the tourism industry where you are. What's up? What's down?
That's a really good question. And golf courses are up. I can tell you that, right? Like, the fishing industry, the outdoors industry in general is up. One local golf course that I talked with, Pebble Lake in Fergus Falls, you know, best summer ever, right? You walk into any local bait shop or even national chain bait shop, and it's pretty obvious that people are out fishing or enjoying the outdoors in some way, shape, or form. What's interesting is lodging. Some resorts, and I don't have an explanation as to why, some resorts, best summer ever, right? Like, people have picked up the phone and said, we want to get away from it all, so we're going to come up to a resort. Other resorts, not best summer ever, you know, ever. You know, a lot of it depends on where their current or former clientele is coming from. If they're, you know, if their clientele is a quasi local clientele within the state, within driving distance, they've seen an increase. If it's out of state or East Coast, West Coast, or Colorado, you know, it depends on where the people are coming from. Those resorts are feeling the pinch of it. So I don't know that it's a certain sectors are up or down. You know, outdoor related industries are definitely, you know, fishing license sales in Minnesota off the charts. So some businesses are having a great summer, and some businesses are struggling mightily because of the clientele that they have and where they're coming from.
Now, you mentioned fishing licenses off the charts in Minnesota. Is that a blip because of the pandemic? Because it seems to me that a lot of the traditional hunting and fishing activities that I grew up with, and I'm from Detroit Lakes originally, have diminished over the years. Not as many people are going deer hunting. And maybe with all the water sports that are going on these days on big lakes like Pelican and Otter Tail, maybe fishing is a little bit down because of all these outboards racing up and down the lake.
I hope it's not a blip. I mean, if it is I can certainly understand if it becomes a blip on the screen, right? Like once, you know, let's assume everything, you know, we get the all clear next spring and kids can go back to Little League and softball and all the, you know, all the regularly scheduled events that they have. And I would say that's probably, I'm speculating, but that's probably one of the reasons that license sales were increased, is because there wasn't much else you could do organized anyways. I hope it's not a blip. What I'm hoping is that, you know, people either A, forgot about their connection to the outdoors, you know, and maybe this summer that was rekindled, right? And they're like, oh wow, yeah, I remember this, like you said, you know, as I was a kid, this is awesome. Or maybe they're a first timer, right? Like maybe they hadn't fished before and they're just getting into it. So I hope the blip doesn't become a blip. The only thing, you know, time will tell if that's the case, but yeah, they're, you know, you mentioned hunting, you know, hunting numbers are declining. The number of people that hunt, that number is declining. And I don't have a cause effect for that, but hopefully, like I said, people are valuing their reconnection with the outdoors. And that'll lead to more outdoor recreation, if you will.
When I was looking into talking to you about this, and this is Eric Osberg, the Rural Rebound Initiative Coordinator for Otter Tail County, Minnesota, I was directed to a website, thedailyyonder.com, which is out of Knoxville, Tennessee, and it basically extols the virtues of rural life, and that makes me wonder, are other rural areas in the U.S. doing what Otter Tail County is trying to do? It would seem to be a natural, wouldn't it?
I think the good news is I think we're ahead of the curve. I think we were one of the first from a governmental standpoint, right? Like the Otter Tail County Board had to say, this is important, right? If the board didn't, I work at the discretion of the board. And so as a governmental agency, I think it is pretty rare for a government to decide, you know what, we think resident recruitment is something we should get in the business of. I have, you know, since I've taken on this position, because it is fairly unique, people who are trying to do the similar things. I've talked with, you know, groups in South Dakota. I went and presented at the Main Street Summit in North Dakota. I've been to Maine. I've talked with groups from upstate New York and Tennessee. So there are many other groups that are trying to tap into this natural phenomenon. It usually comes off of the heels of Ben Winchester. Usually they somehow, some way come across Ben's research, and then they connect with Ben, and then Ben says, well, you should talk to Eric, because he's the guy that's doing something with this, right? And there's many groups, even within, you know, there's a group in southwestern Minnesota called Get Rural. There's lots of different organizations. I think we are one of, at least as far as I know, one of the few governmental organizations that have decided to make this a priority.
How about other attractions? Because people have a broader scope of interest nowadays, you know, like bike and nature trails and increased hospitality options. Really, you know, there's fine dining in Lakes area now.
Yeah, and that's it. You know, obviously, I'm going to sound like a salesman when I say this, but there literally is something for everybody, especially, and it doesn't have to be hunting or fishing. You had mentioned biking. We have a community of the community of Battle Lake is invested heavily in biking. They have a trail system from their quaint downtown, which is on the shores of Battle Lake, all the way up to Glendalough State Park. And Glendalough State Park is set up for biking as well. So there's one example. Hiking, you've got Maplewood State Park up in near Pelican Rapids, Minnesota. I would put Maplewood, as far as fall colors go, I lived in Duluth. I loved Duluth. I would put Maplewood State Park in that area up against the North Shore when it comes to fall colors.
It's a destination. Yes, it is. It
as a destination. That drive, Highway 108 from Pelican to Perham, is unlike any other road in Minnesota. You know, arts, culture, Fergus Falls. Fergus Falls has a booming arts and culture community. Theater and 2D art and it, you know, you name it. And so, again, I sound like a salesman, but there is literally paddling. If you like to paddle a canoe or a kayak, we've got 150 mile, the Otter Tail River State Water Trail. You can hop on the Otter Tail River. The DNR has made portages and everything. And you could canoe from base almost Frazee down and around and over to Fergus Falls in a couple of canoes. So what's been fun for me is this is all discovery for me. I'm not from Otter Tail County, and factually I don't even live there right now. I live a block and a half from the border, but I lived my life in Wadena and East and South. And so I got to discover, I had never been to Maplewood State Park before I got this job. And now every excuse I have to go back, you know, and same with Fergus Falls and same with Perham. And so, you know, like it's, there's so much to discover. And that's why, again, that's why we use the tourism as the gateway to it, right? Because, you know, you try it before you buy it type of deal. If you came up for a weekend and you visited the quaint communities and did some fun stuff and you found that they had good broadband or good internet wherever you were, you might just on that Sunday evening when you're packing up to go home say, you know what, do we really have to leave? and that's the bit. That's how we sell it.
Eric, you're very enthusiastic. That's probably good for the job you're doing.
Enthusiasm can be confused with expertise, right? I read that. So I'm messing that quote up, but there, enthusiasm can be confused with knowledge. So I just try to put as much enthusiasm out as I can, because maybe I can fool somebody into it.
Eric Osberg is Rural Rebound Initiative Coordinator for Otter Tail County, Minnesota. Thanks for being with us today, Eric.
Thank you so much.
Coming up on Main Street, a theater in Northeast North Dakota goes online to keep their summer season going. First, the news.
For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster. Minnesota's health commissioner is watching some coronavirus case indicators to see if control measures are working or if there is a need to tighten up. The state has had more than 52,000 diagnosed infections, and about 5,000 are considered active cases. The rate of positive cases to tests is about 5%. The state mask mandate took effect last weekend, and Commissioner Jan Malcolm says it's a step that could have head off any need to shut down businesses again.
We do feel like we're in sort of a vulnerable state, but we feel like if Minnesotans can understand the importance of complying with the guidance that's out there and the current executive orders, we can impact these rates within a few weeks.
Meanwhile, Governor Tim Walz is expected to make an announcement Thursday on what next Minnesota school year will look like. Governor Burgum says it's unfortunate that face coverings have become politicized during the pandemic.
For all the trillions of dollars of federal support, one of the cheapest ways to slow the spread of an infection is wearing a mask. People don't believe in masks. Next time you have surgery, just tell all the nurses and the doctors in the room they don't need to wear one. I mean, there's a reason they do. And it's to protect, you know, the patient and to protect the spread of infection.
Burgum says there are a lot of studies indicating that masks aren't perfect, but they do slow the spread of coronavirus. Burgum says people should be thanked for wearing masks because, quote, they are protecting you and protecting other North Dakotans. And Fargo City Commissioners approved two mandates requiring face masks. The first requires passengers on city buses to wear masks beginning Monday, August 3rd. Matt Peterson, Assistant MAT Transit Director, says the buses cross between Fargo and Moorhead, so the decision will conform with Minnesota's mandate that took effect Saturday that buses and all public transportation require passengers to wear masks. What if a rider refuses to wear a mask? Well, Peterson says Metro Transit has a policy to deal with any disruption of bus service that requires police response.
It's an automatic two-year trespass. You know, for any wide variety of reasons. We do have programs in place, though, to reduce that two-year trespass if those people were to call us and set up some sort of a meeting. For example, intoxicated passengers, sometimes they'll go to treatment. And we'll remove the trespass early, give them another chance.
The mandate for city buildings is still a work in progress involving the administration, city attorney, and human resources. It will require masks in all city facilities, including City Hall, libraries, and the Fargo Dome. It is expected to be finalized at the next city commission meeting in 2 weeks. City commissioners also approved a directive that strongly recommends people wear masks in public settings. It does not have any enforcement power and carries no fine. For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster.
African Soul American Heart protects orphan girls from South Sudan from forced marriage by keeping them in school until they're adults and able to make their own choices about their futures. Learn more at asahinsudan.org.
You're listening to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. Like most of us, performers are finding new ways to work during the pandemic. Some community theaters are moving to outdoor spaces, or producing shows with small casts, or finding ways to let the audience watch from the safety of their homes. Frostfire Summer Theater in the northeast corner of North Dakota has scheduled an ambitious summer season. The theater is putting out 4 different shows online in as many weeks. You can find the schedule at frostfirepark.org. It's accessible entertainment and a fundraiser to help keep the theater alive. David Pockert is the theater manager, and Misty Cope is a cast member. They spoke with our Ashley Thornburg.
David, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Misty, thank you for joining us today.
You're welcome.
So obviously, being in live theater, anything can happen, and you just have to be prepared for that famous phrase, the show must go on, and that does mean global pandemic, the show must go on. Misty, what is it like right now? You're putting out this series of shorter shows. Usually a musical would be hour and a half to 2.5 hours. These are 40-minute series coming out on a weekly basis. Anything in your performing career prepare you for this?
Not necessarily. I mean, this whole, the last few months we've all been very more flexible and trying to be more patient with the way things are shaping up. But yeah, I tell you, we had small rehearsals. We kind of became our own quarantine family as far as you know, making sure we checked in with each other and everybody's we're healthy, we're good, or do we wear masks, or how are we doing? And but I guess it was a delight. It was a delightful experience. And even though they were 3 short shows, just as much effort went into learning and costuming and, you know, refining each piece. So it's been just as much work, but not as much performance time.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
I was thinking when I first read online about how Frostfire was going to be tackling this season, and I thought, oh, that sounds so much more involved than even a normal summer theater program, which is intense, and you're getting performers across the state coming together. You have to learn all of the music, you have to learn the choreography, you have to make the costumes, practice. David, as the theater manager in, I guess in this sense, a virtual theater, can you sort of paint a picture, theater of the mind, of just what it's like right now being a theater manager and this pivot in the creative direction here.
Well, I think, you know, when we made the decision that the pandemic certainly put us in a situation where we were not able to open for the summer, we had to kind of creatively come together and think about, well, can we do something? Or do we just need to wait until, you know, next summer, 2021? And we had seen, or we saw a number of videos that virtual shows were being done all over the country. And, of course, many entertainers were doing their virtual shows from their bathroom and their kitchen and different places like that. And we thought, well, you know what, why can't we do something like that? And so we decided to explore the option of doing something like this. We'd already had our cast in place, and you know, a couple weeks before starting our first rehearsals, and so we thought, well, what if the cast was willing for us to try to put something like this together? And certainly we had many concerns on whether or not it was even possible to do, what sorts of precautions we needed to take, and how we could logistically kind of put this all together. So it's been a real different challenge for us. But I think as we've just finished up our final taping, we kind of look back at it really being quite a remarkable experience for all of us.
Performers are doing live concerts from their own bathrooms, but this is not the approach you took. You have a dozen or more performers still performing together. And like we mentioned, there's three productions, and then it ends with a special alumni concert. And they're being released Saturdays at frostfirepark.org/summertheater. Let's just take a listen to the first number here of the one that came out on July 25th. This is the opening number for the show called Grand Old Country. This is Rocky Top, Tennessee.
Soda pop, I still dream about that.
Misty, the opening vocals on that was, of course, you. And then we get into the ensemble singing. And in this season, it is primarily an ensemble cast. There are some feature moments. You have lots of experience also being a lead performer. We're talking Maria in The Sound of Music, Dolly in Hello, Dolly, Annie Oakley in Annie, Get Your Gun. And I want to talk about the performer and feeding on audience energy, and then what it's like to have that same level of performance energy, magical realism, without the audience there.
Yeah, it is different. It can be challenging to be super bubbly and happy and in the moment when you know nobody's watching, you know. However, this group in particular, just some great attitudes. Everybody just worked really well together. I know David and Amy Jo would say the same thing, so that helped. We were all connected, confident with each other's performing vocally and acting-wise. There was an incentive within the group because it was a good group. And maybe even remembering how that audience feels and thinking about the audience that we didn't get to see this summer, but that many of them are just going to be so delighted to see what Frostfire is doing. So I kind of kept that stuff in the back of my head as we were filming. I've been in other professional situations where you just you have to give it whether you have it or not. So we were helping each other feel that as well.
Yeah, and then these are being filmed. Usually you're performing live. A little different here.
It is, and many of us are, I would say, more stage actors than film actors. We all had learning curves going on. Just having cameras at different angles or right in front of you.
Or, so much fun.
You know, and then they're not in front of you, but you know that you might be caught by the other camera, so there's no letting up.
David, I want to talk about this process from a technical, and you're the theater manager for Frostfire, and you and your wife, Amy Jo, have also been longtime creative working partners. You have directed a number of shows at Frostfire in its 36-year history. Amy, I understand, is doing the lion's share of directing for this run, but certainly as theater manager and occasional co-director and executive producer, how are the rehearsals working right now when all of a sudden you have to throw into the mix, you don't have an audience, you don't have that energy, you do all of a sudden have video cameras, totally different lighting?
You know, I think that one of the real big components of it is that as directors and performers, I think we really feed off one another's energies. I think that there are cast members that sort of raise the bar and help everybody kind of reach even further in terms of performance level. And so it's real exciting. A number of our performers this year are very young. Three or four of our performers just finished their freshman year in college.
Wow.
Typically, many of our performers at Frostfire are in their mid-20s, 30s, and older. We're just so fortunate. We had several of the performers with us last year, and we enjoyed their involvement in our show. So we were so excited that they wanted to return. And again, they're our future of Frostfire, and hopefully we can provide them with opportunities that sort of stretch their acting and singing chops and really provide them with experiences that will hopefully want them to come back year after year.
We're visiting today with David Pockert. He is the theater manager for Frostfire's summer theater program. He and his wife, Amy Jo, are executive producers and co-directors of their summer theater program and have been for decades. And we're also visiting with Misty Cope. She is a longtime performer. You've probably seen her at Frostfire or Medora, and she has a wealth of videos available on her YouTube channel as well. This is a fundraiser, David. The first show came out on the 25th, and you're releasing Still to Come, Swing Time, The Fabulous 50s, and then an alumni concert. How's the fundraiser going so far?
Well, we've been very pleased with our response. You know, everything just started on Saturday, so we're just kind of out of the gates, as you might say, and we've received many comments on Facebook and social media, and even folks that we've met on the street saying how pleased they are that we're doing the shows and that they're enjoying the video version. We just had a call from a neighbor friend who said, you know, it felt like I was just sitting there in the audience.
Hmm.
And so those are kind of the responses that, you know, make you feel like that it is working, even though they're not getting live theater experience, they're getting an experience that is worthwhile and really enjoyable to watch.
Well, I caught myself being able to sort of dance around my bedroom, something I would not be brave enough to do if I were live. So there's that. But why not charge for the link? Why make it a fundraiser instead of pray in advance, get the link?
Well, I think one of the things that we want to do is we want to provide an opportunity for as many people to see our shows, get to learn about Frostfire. We've done a fairly large campaign where we've contacted many senior care centers and senior homes throughout the state, letting them know that we have this available and we would love to provide this entertainment for them, particularly when so many people have been shut in during this time. We just feel that it's a service, and as well as it is a pledge drive, and we do rely on our summer theater revenue to keep things going at Frostfire throughout the year, as well as we're really hoping that we can make some renovations with new seating and flooring and a number of things within the theater that makes the experience for our audience an improved one as they come up next year and the years ahead.
Misty, what do regional theaters mean to a performer?
You are creating something artistic on stage. You're creating a live experience. You're not just, you know, you're not just at home watching a movie. You go to the theater to be part of a different world and to experience a show. So you're with the actors on there. You're enjoying their story live. And regional theater also brings people together. It's something to do. It's an event. Many people look forward to, oh, what's next? What's this year? I love it because it's where we grew up. Most of us that do Frostfire are from this area. And it's it becomes a tradition, and the people that watch us are familiar. It just becomes a loving part of community to look forward to here.
You know, Ashley, yeah. Could I add one other thing, too, to that? Is that, and I think Misty touched on it a little bit, but we have many people from the region, a number that travel even 200-300 miles away, and they come every year. It's their summer tradition. You know, for us, we oftentimes see those same faces for us being actors and directors. And it is, you know, quite often like family to see these people come back year after year. And I think for us to do the virtual shows was something that we wanted to do so that we could still stay connected to so many of those people. Obviously, we wanted to make sure that we did it in a safe way. And I think that we've, you know, tried to do our rehearsals, and even in terms of our staging, you know, being careful with distancing people.
Yeah, no love scenes.
Wearing masks when we can, and we're rehearsing outside, things like that. And so in regards to it being our regional theater, it's something that is special for this area, and we just wanted to keep it going if we could.
So, Misty, we played clips of you singing, and obviously if you watch the video, you see that you dance and you perform. But let's see here if I even get even close to all of these. You also play the accordion, the saxophone, the trombone. You play the big bass drum. you play the knee cymbals. You play the kazoo, the flute, the French horn. I watched a video of you playing the Saints Go Marching In, and I got winded just watching you. Born performer, huh?
I guess so. You know, my parents are, I guess, they can both carry a tune, and they did try band in school, but no, I think I don't know where I came from. my siblings did dabble in theater as well growing up. It's just something, I think our friends were doing it, but I fell in love with it, I tell you. I was 6 years old, and I was cast, you know, as a River City Kid and Music Man in East Grand Forks, Minnesota, and I couldn't get enough of it, and yeah, I talk to kids now, and there are kids just like me, you know, in Grand Forks that I just love because I know how they feel. It's very, yeah, and musician, I guess, I don't know. My brain just works with fingerings. I just clarinet, trumpet, whatever. I guess it's just me.
Yeah, I watched you playing three instruments at the same time in that video.
I'm a goofball. I love math. I love spelling. I don't know. It's just, it all, my parents will tell you, there's nobody like Misty. It's just her own entity. And luckily the stage has become a very comforting place for me. Yeah.
And Ashley, I do want to mention one other thing, if it's okay, is that Amy Jo and I probably met Misty in a theater experience when she was about 7 or 8. I know that we worked together in 1989 in the musical Oliver. Being from Grand Forks, you know, our paths crossed quite a bit. And it's been just a delight for us to be able to watch her grow through her teen years and her college years and her years beyond. It's really been a thrill. And now to have Misty back with us and being a part of our Frostfire family has really been very special to us.
And working as an educator, too, educating the next generation of young performers. David, I read that you and Amy Jo decided to close up the art gallery that you also ran together in Michigan, North Dakota, this on top of being directors and executive producers of a summer theater program. She is a pianist. You are a photographer. You closed this up because, and the quote said, you were looking for ways to simplify your lives. Now here you are directing four shows in a single summer. I'm not sure if you know what the word simplify means.
Well, you know, it's kind of how Amy Jo and I have lived our lives, and just even thinking of this summer, sometimes you kind of come home at, you know, 11:30 at night, and you kind of, oh my gosh, why did I? You know, it's been a pretty long day, but then, you know, when you get to moments like this, when we're opening the show and you're getting a big response and you're working with some really wonderfully talented, nice people, you kind of go, you know, that's why we're doing it. So they're mm-hmm. all kind of these little life journeys that you kind of say it may have been challenging along the way, but you know, at the end, so much of it's just been so rewarding.
Well, I want to thank you both for your time today.
Yes, you're
welcome. Well, thank you.
And let's end with another performance from Grand Ole Opry. This is the Tennessee Waltz.
I remember that night and the Tennessee Waltz, and I know just how much I have lost.
Arts programming on Prairie Public is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, a state agency developing, promoting, and supporting the arts in North Dakota. Main Street's Ashley Thornburg talking with Frostfire Theater Manager David Pockert and cast member Misty Cope. You can watch the show and help the theater with a donation at frostfirepark.org. Dakota Datebook is next.
Listen to the Great American Folk Show this weekend for a little slice of home.
Babe used to say they had three kinds of pie at the curb. Pie, apple pie, and pie.
A small town big dreamer.
Norma Dolores Eggstrom was not a name for a star.
We spotted the ocean.
A West Coast rock frontman with a nice view. From that same area, a musical discovery.
We want a blue sky, and now we got a town.
That Sunny War, you'll hear her. Glenn Phillips of Toad the Wet Sprocket. Bluegrass legend Peter Rowan. And from the Peggy Lee Museum in Wimbledon, North Dakota, Mary Beth Orne and Bethany Andrus.
There were clowns and elephants and dancing bears.
Talk about a variety show. It's all happening on the Great American Folk Show with Tom Brousseau. We hope you'll join us Sunday at 5 p.m. Central, 4 Mountain on Prairie Public.
Everybody's got the fever. That is something you all know.
This is Dakota Datebook for July 28th. Leland Thomas Engelhorn was born September 19th, 1922, at Church's Ferry, North Dakota. When World War II broke out, 18-year-old Leland joined the Air Corps and was sent to Europe. On his 21st mission, he was a ball turret gunner and radio operator on a B-24. On August 3, 1944, they were coming back from a bombing run when German fighters attacked. They lost five B-24s, while the Germans lost 13 ME-109s. They were high in the Austrian Alps when the crew of Engelhorn's B-24 had to bail out. Engelhorn was badly wounded from shrapnel, but he tried to reach Switzerland, a neutral country. After 18 days, when he was spotted by some children, he knew it was over. He walked to an Austrian farm cottage where a sympathetic family welcomed him, but everyone knew they would have to turn him in. He finally received medical attention at a POW camp. The The doctors there had no anesthetics, but they did allow Leland to get liquored up before they removed the shrapnel from his wounds. Engelhorn passed through several POW camps before arriving in Stalag Luft IV in what is now Poland. In 1945, the advance of Russian troops forced the Germans to move the prisoners. Engelhorn became part of the Black March when roughly 6,000 POWs moved out on foot in groups of several hundred men. They carried heavy packs of Red Cross food, but believing the march would only last 3 days, many of those packs were discarded along the road. They would be sorely missed. The march lasted 86 days, covering 600 miles, during one of the worst winters in European history. Cold, dysentery, and starvation claimed at least 1,500 prisoners on that march. When they finally reached central Germany, it was a gruesome, twisted scene. Prisoners inside the camp wanted to get out, and the death march prisoners couldn't wait to get in. Inside, they still received no food, and after several days, they were taken out and marched back toward Poland. A couple of weeks later, when they were finally liberated, Engelhorn weighed only 95 pounds. After coming home, he got a bachelor's and master's degree in geography at UND. He moved to the San Diego area, where he and his wife raised six children. And he retired in 1990 after 30 years of teaching. Leland Thomas Engelhorn died on this date in 2003. Today's Dakota Datebook, written by Mary Helm. I'm Bill Thomas.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
In Paris during World War II, German soldiers looted Jewish homes.
The paintings and the books, everything, even the bed and the blankets, all the furniture was stolen.
They also took musical instruments, pianos and violins.
And then the question is, what happens to this instrument if you're not there to claim it back?
The long search for those lost possessions. That's on the next morning edition from NPR News.
Starting at 4 a.m. Central, right here on Prairie Public.
Thank you for joining us today for Main Street. As you know, as we broadcast, we stream at prairiepublic.org, so you can listen to us more than one way. And after the show, you can find any Main Street program at prairiepublic.org. Wednesday on Main Street, August 6th, will mark the 75th anniversary of the atomic bomb dropped on Hiroshima, Japan. Just a few days later, another bomb was dropped on Nagasaki, which ended World War II. Steve Olson's new book, The Apocalypse Factory, Plutonium and the Making of the Atomic Age, chronicles the discovery and weaponizing of plutonium and the consequences of the nuclear arms race. And we'll also check in with Fargo-Moorhead Community Theater Artistic Director Adam Pankow about staging the musical Hairspray outdoors. We hope you can join us for Main Street on Wednesday. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your day.